This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now we have a massive problem again, it seems, with the COVID virus. We don't have it alone because all across Europe, the infections are growing, some exponentially. In the Netherlands, they've introduced a new lockdown. In Austria, there's a severe measure against people who are unvaccinated. They're not allowed to leave their homes. Except to get some shopping or for other health reasons. In Ireland, we've had 40,000 infections in the past fortnight. And according to the Sunday Times lead story yesterday, we have the 12th highest infection rate in the world and the worst, and this is a World Health Organization statistic, the worst infection rate in Europe. Tonight, the Cabinet COVID subcommittee is meeting to consider advice that they have received from NPHET, and tomorrow the full cabinet will meet to see what the response should be, if any, to this really bad news, which of course most seriously puts the public health service at risk in many, many ways, overcrowding, under-resourced and so on. We're joined now to discuss all of this by Tomás Ryan. Tomás is Associate Professor at the School of Biochemistry and Immunology at Trinity College, and he has been a very valuable contributor on COVID matters to The Stand since this pandemic began. Tomás, the problem is not unique to Ireland, although we have the worst infection rate at the moment by a certain metric in Europe, in Western Europe. Where are we with this disease at the moment, in your opinion?
I think that we're in a worsening situation. We're certainly no longer in a precarious position. We're in a bad position because we're seeing significantly increasing infections well beyond NPHET's modeling. It seems that NPHET's modeling did not account enough for waning immunity. It certainly did not account for what we call seasonality, and it underestimated the risk, or the facts rather, of transmission from children. So we're at a situation now where we're around 4,000 cases a day. It's likely to get significantly worse than this. That can happen quite quickly. And there's no reason to think that it's going to come down this side of Christmas. And if we look across to the UK, we can see the cases are rising there again. So this is a bad position to be in. And nearly half of people who are currently in the ICU are vaccinated. And the reason for that is, of course, vaccine breakthroughs. Vaccines are wonderful, but they're not perfect. And when you have enough infections in the community, you're going to get enough breakthroughs to put pressure on the healthcare system. Right now, we have about 580 people in hospital with COVID and about 105 people in the ICU with COVID. Whereas when we started lockdown one, we had 318 people in hospital and 68 people in the ICU, and significantly less than that at the beginning of lockdown two and three. So we're really not in a great position, and we're moving towards a situation where we would have unsustainable pressure on our ICU capacity in hospitals. We already know that hospitals are starting to reduce their regular services. And the exposure that we have is quite significant, because we could be looking in a, I'm not even in a worst case scenario, but in a bad scenario, if we keep going as we do, as we're going right now, without further mitigations or a change in course, then it's quite possible that we would have between 1,500 and 2,000 COVID deaths by March, which I don't think is a result that any of us want to see.
No, and the news in briefings coming out of the cabinet, which will decide this matter tomorrow, that is Tuesday, is that they are very much against, on the whole, any mention of another lockdown and any mention of reversing some of the opening up that we did, nightclubs and pubs spring to mind. And there's another interesting behaviour and attitudes poll commissioned by the Sunday Times. And one of its findings is that 57% of Irish people are planning to socialise this Christmas as they did before the pandemic, while only 36% said they would be more cautious. That is a really interesting finding, that 57% of people are going to, as it were, have the kind of normal Christmas, which involves a lot of socialising in families and in workplaces, than before the pandemic. That's troubling, surely.
Well, I think a lot of that reflects poor communication from government. And I have to say poor communication from many elements of our media at the moment. I don't think that everybody really knows what's going on at the moment. And I think that that will change once people become more aware of the situation. But of course, I think the best case scenario, Eamon, is that we take control of this situation so that we don't find ourselves in a situation where we might need a circuit breaker lockdown to take care of it. Now, none of us want a lockdown. I don't want a lockdown. You don't want a lockdown. I mean, it's everyone is in agreement that we are against having to have a lockdown, but we only do them in this country anyway when we absolutely have to.
When you said there about what's going on and people don't know what's going on, what is going on?
Well, what's going on is that we've had a government policy that was informed by very hopeful NPHET modelling and a plan about the virus which failed. So there was a gamble that children would not contribute significantly to this virus, that changing seasons would not significantly affect the transmission of the virus indoors, and that cases would start to go down now. I mean, the whole point of the reopening was that it was partly informed by NPHET modelling and said that once we got to the level of vaccination that we're now at, that cases would start to go down. Now, that was a possible scenario. In ISAG, we always thought this was an unlikely scenario, but it was possible, and we hoped it would happen, but we didn't think it would, and it didn't. So cases are rising. And people will say, well, the vaccines are protecting most people. Yeah, the vaccines are protecting most people, but they're not protecting enough people, and they're not protecting you if you get exposed to the virus enough. You can still get sick, and we know that immunity is waning in these vaccines, and we need to talk about how we're going to manage boosters. The risk to children is growing significantly, and I'm very concerned about what's happening in our schools at present. And we are.
You told us and our listeners 2 months ago of the dangers of schools and children spreading this disease. You pointed to that danger 2 months ago, and you asked very relevant questions about air filtration and other matters, testing and tracing and all of that. So we didn't do it. We didn't do what we should have done.
We didn't do it. It's not too late. We haven't seen the worst outcomes of this yet. What we're seeing...
What do we need to do in relation to schools?
I think immediately we need to have face masks in schools. And I think we need to have serial testing in schools doesn't have to be antigen testing. It can be saliva-based testing, which needs to be PCR testing. But that's what they're doing in France, Amen, and many other countries. And the reason I like saliva-based PCR testing is that anybody who's had to swab a seven-year-old up and do a nasal swab in a seven-year-old knows yes. they would much rather be doing it by simply getting them to spit into a tube. And then having PCR tests being picked up at the school, because then you can pool them also. I mean, it's not really important whether it's antigen or PCR. It's about just having serial testing in schools. Air filtration in each school, if we were to have proper HEPA filters in each classroom in Ireland, it would come to 13 to 15 million euro. And restoration of contact tracing in schools. These are not aspirational measures. These are things that are being done in many other European countries. We can afford to do them. It is logistically possible for us to do them. I think we should do them immediately. The exposure that we have is significant, Eamon. If we really let this spread through the child population, which could happen quite rapidly in late November and in December, it could mean a lot of child hospitalizations and some child deaths. Now, we've already had one child, as in a 14-year-old, who is reported by the HBSE to have died with COVID-19 in Ireland. In the UK, 110 children have died in associated with COVID-19. And there's debates, of course, about how many of them died with COVID versus from COVID. But, you know, you're not dealing yes. with elderly people here. You're dealing with teenagers. A lot of them had teenagers and children. A lot of them had pre-existing conditions. And I found it quite disturbing that much of the media tried to explain away child COVID deaths by saying they had a pre-existing condition. Now, a lot of us have pre-existing conditions. Asthma is a pre-existing condition. Eczema is a pre-existing condition. I mean, a lot of our children have these, and it doesn't make them any less, their deaths any less important or tragic. The issue is that if the UK continue to spread this virus in the younger population, somewhere between 600 and 700 British children could potentially die. But in Ireland, of course, that number would be, you know, somewhere between 60 and 70. Now, that's probably not going to happen because we're not going to allow the virus, I hope, to spread through our schools before we start vaccinating children, which will hopefully happen here, I suppose, in and around January and February when we start to move in that direction. But I would put a particularly grim number on the table, which is that imagine that we reach the level of child infection that the UK has already reached. So I'm not talking about the virus ripping through the population in its entirety. I'm saying, imagine we get to the level of child infection in Ireland that the UK has already experienced to date. Well, that would mean that today there are 8 or 9 children alive in Ireland that would not be alive in February when we start to vaccinate children, if we get to the same level of infection as the UK. Now, that's a very kind of harrowing thing to consider. Yes. And I don't want that to happen. And the UK has not been very good at mitigation measures in schools. It has not been very good even on the vaccination of teenagers. But other countries in Europe have been, such as France, such as parts of Germany. And the advice from the American Center for Disease Control, as we've already discussed in the past, is that children should be masked in, and that we need to be doing everything we can to protect our children. And I look over across the Atlantic, and my friends and colleagues and relatives there are vaccinating their young children, children as young as 5. And then I look Yes. across at continental Europe, not everywhere in continental Europe, but many countries in continental Europe. And people are protecting their children in schools with serial saliva-based testing, with attention to ventilation, and with a lot of kids staying home a lot of the time when you have high COVID cases, which is awful, but that's what you have to do. And then in the UK and Ireland, we still are pushing this mantra that schools are safe and children are of low risk. Both premises are simply not true. And I think that we're particularly vulnerable to this right now.
Let me ask you about the vaccination waning. And what we know about the time it takes, we have, I think, 92% of our people over the age of 12 are vaccinated, the highest in maybe the world, certainly in Europe. This idea that the vaccine wanes, how has science measured this, if at all? Because for obvious reasons, you have to let the passage of time determine how long it takes to become less efficacious. What do we know about that timeline that you can tell people?
We're learning a lot about it now, but I think when we use the term vaccine waning, we're already looking at it in the wrong way, because no one ever assumed that these effects would be persistent. And we know from other coronaviruses that the immunity does not last necessarily that long. So when you talk about vaccine waning, you're starting from a point of assuming long-lasting immunity. Really, we should be starting from the question of how long does immunity last? So ask neutrally, not is it fading or is it lasting, but ask just neutrally, how long will immunity last from these vaccines? And the answer was...
Do we know?
We're learning that it starts to go down after about 6 months. And that it's, if you get a booster, it significantly improves the efficacy of the vaccine. So if you have, as Israel has shown, if you have 3 doses of the vaccine of Pfizer, you're even more protected than after you were immediately after 2 doses. We don't know yet how long the efficacy of 3 doses is going to last, what the longevity of it is. But I think that we need to probably plan that we're going to be taking boosters every 6 months to 12 months for a good period of time in the future. And I think we need to accept that boosters are going to be a part of this, but at the same time, it's not going to solve this. The US are offering boosters to everyone. The UK said today that they will offer boosters to everyone over 40. New Zealand, who are a little bit ahead of us in vaccination, and they're using all Pfizer with ideally separated dosage, but New Zealand are already offering boosters to everyone. And I know it raises ethical issues for obvious reasons about vaccine access in developing countries. And that is an issue, and that's a separate issue. If you're using vaccination to control this particular virus within a environment, I think that we need to be taking boosters on board as part of the course. At the same time, it seems clear that boosters on their own are not going to solve this. And Israel is not relying on boosters on their own. Israel is relying on a vaccine plus strategy. So is Japan. Japan has been particularly successful post-vaccination. They had a very bad time at the Olympics. The Olympics did not do them any favors. The population got very annoyed by it. They changed the prime minister. The new prime minister had a different strategy. And now they're in a situation in Japan where they are about 200 to 250 cases a day. For Ireland, that would be about 8 to 10 cases a day. So imagine post-vaccination, we got down to 8 to 10 cases a day. It would be a completely different environment. So I think we need to learn what works from other countries as usual, but we're in a different world now. So, you know, before vaccination, we were the countries that were extremely successful. And this still seems to be the case when you look retrospectively, that overall the most successful countries were the ones that kept the virus down, even if that meant quite strict measures on things like travel quarantine. So South Korea, Taiwan, New Zealand, Australia, these are the countries that were very successful, had the right formulas for success pre-vaccination. Post-vaccination, we're in a different world.
What's vaccination plus? You mentioned that.
Vaccination plus means a strategy that is not just wait and vaccinate, which was the policy in Ireland, that we would vaccinate everyone and this would take care of it. It doesn't work on its own, because even though we get such high vaccine coverage in Ireland, the virus can still infect a lot of people who are vaccinated, and they can spread the virus very easily. And it can also cause a lot of vaccine breakthrough. The virus can still cause a lot of vaccine breakthroughs. So vaccines alone get you 4/5 of the way there, maybe more than that. But you, if you want society to continue undisrupted, you need to have a final push on the virus that is not by vaccines. So that's the plus part. And the plus needs to be, I think, a focus on air hygiene, focus on testing and tracing and support of public health, but generally also to have a policy of bringing the cases down, to always be progressively suppressing the virus. And if we're going to live with the virus in our world, that's one thing. It's quite a different thing to say we're going to live with the virus in our house, in our school, in our workplace, or in our social yes. environment. It's like us all going and socializing in a swimming pool without any chlorine in it. It's just going to lead yeah. to bad results. We need to get the virus out of the air when we're...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Indoors.
Now, there appears to be, in fact, I believe there is, a consensus among the people who govern us and who influence the people who govern us, that we've got to get real. This is the way they phrase it. We've got to learn to live with this virus. We can't stop our normal activity in business and socializing. And they're fed up with the likes of you and indeed with me. And they don't want to listen. And this is a universal consensus, really. You hear it in Britain, particularly it's our neighbours, so we watch it. But you, in the US as well, many important politicians and governors say, look, we have to get on with this. We've got to get on with our business. We can't shut our lives down. That's a fairly comfortable idea. For some people, I don't agree with it, but that's where we are, Tomás, in Ireland today.
I wouldn't want to be too glib about the issue, but it actually is an extremely solvable problem. You just need to get rid of those people. That's what they did in Japan. They changed the government. Now, the problem is yeah. that the opposition in this country have not recently taken a much better position, even though the opposition is usually in a more luxurious position with regard to what they can say. Sinn Féin have not really been taking a sensible position so far on schools, and also Labour, the Social Democrats, etc. They haven't really been taking the kind of very forthright positions that they did in, yes, in February, March. So I don't think there's an easy solution to that. I do think that we're giving way too much airtime and way too much credence to people who are advocating, I think irresponsibly, for a very small opinion that has been exaggerated, not a small opinion, but a very specific opinion, which I don't think is shared by the population, which I think for most of the pandemic has not been shared by the population. And this is the same type of advocacy that led to our Christmas reopening last year, which of course was so disastrous that, look, we just need to get on with it and live with the virus. And it's more important that these special interest groups get what they are asking for in the short term, then we look after, first of all, the health of the population, but also the long-term economic interests of the country, including those particular organizations who are advocating for us to ignore the virus. The people who have been advocating on behalf of different economic sectors for living with the virus, as we have been doing, and as we are doing now, which is not sustainable, they have shown quite clearly that they don't understand what they're talking about. They have also shown repeatedly that they are not willing to learn from their mistakes. They have also shown repeatedly that they are not willing to listen to experts, whether they're government-appointed experts or whether they're independent experts, no matter how much effort those scientists and medics put into to make their information accessible, people who are advocating for opening society in this way simply have shown that they are not willing to listen. I think that because of that, they have shown themselves to be doing their jobs inadequately, because I don't think they're looking after their membership. There needs to be a way of looking forward at the next year that says, if we're going to have people in the workplace as much as possible, whether that's offices or whether we're talking about the hospitality sector, that we need to have standards, regulation, enforcement, and support,
yes,
for air hygiene. And if that's not your position, then you are not looking after the safety of your industry economically, and you're not looking after it in terms of how many restaurant staff and restaurant customers is it acceptable to end up in hospital, to end up in the ICU? I mean, is that good for business? It's, yes, not good for business long term. What will happen is you'll see a cultural change where people will socialize at home more.
Yes.
You know, that people, what we've seen over the pandemic is that most of the economic damage is not caused by restrictions. Most of the economic damage is caused by the virus, because people vote with their feet, and you need to make socializing and you need to make working in a normal situation safe. And it's all about buildings and it's all about air hygiene. Now, we hear about living with the virus. That can mean many different things. We are going to be living with this virus in the world for a long time to come.
Yes.
There's a big difference between living with it in the world and living with it in buildings. There's a big difference between living with a small amount of it and living with a large amount of it. So we're told that COVID is going to be endemic, and it probably is going to be endemic. But endemic means lots of different things. So you get sort of misleading attitudes that will say, oh, well, the cold is endemic and the flu is endemic, and that's what COVID will be like. Yes, the cold and the flu are endemic, but so is malaria.
Yes.
So was typhoid at one point. So was tuberculosis. Endemic just means it's living in the community. It has yes, nothing to do with how dangerous the disease is. The other thing is that you can have high-level endemic and low-level endemic. So if we have 10 cases a day, like Japan, well, that counts as an endemic disease.
Yes.
But you just won't notice it because it's in such low numbers. But if we have 10,000 cases a day, well, that's also endemic.
Yes.
So endemic is a very broad category. And I don't think we want to be just living with the virus in large numbers indoors, because if we do that, we're going to have, and this is based on the current numbers that we've already experienced this year, Eamon, we would, yes, have around 3,000, 3,500 deaths a year, could go to more like 5,000 deaths a year. That's post-vaccination, which is the equivalent of 5 to 10 flu seasons a year. And we've spoken about this in the past. That would be on top of the flu. So this is not the flu. This is not going to be the flu.
Right. Let me ask you a final question. Professor Anthony Staines, who has contributed to the stand here, he said, he's professor of health systems at DCU, he said, we're basically sleepwalking our way into another lockdown or a crisis in our hospitals. Would you agree with that overview?
I would 100% agree with that. If we have to have another lockdown, which I think would be a complete failure of government, but I think you're going to see a few of them around Europe at the very least, it's not going to be probably like last year in the sense it wouldn't be a 4 or 5 months, you know, lockdown. It may be a circuit breaker lockdown. I don't know what that will mean yet. I'm not sure anyone does. Or a crisis in our hospitals. Yes, we just simply can't take this many people getting infected with COVID. And we still haven't even figured out the long COVID costs in Ireland because we're not measuring them properly. But in the UK, we can see it's very significant, including on children. So short of a quasi miracle, this isn't going to improve on its own this side of Christmas. So therefore, we need to adjust what we're doing, and we know how to do it broadly. And I think that the most sensible thing the government can do now is to admit, first of all, that this is an airborne disease. They've been hiding this for a long time, because if you come out and you say that COVID is an airborne disease and we need to be managing air hygiene the same way we do our drinking water or our food hygiene, then the government has to take responsibility for that. But also IBEC needs to take responsibility for that in terms of the companies and their membership and the physical environments that they're providing for their people. But I think that we will see a sea change in how we're managing COVID that will be long lasting, and it's going to have to happen eventually. We've seen people, public health leaders in Canada and other countries recently make this admission that COVID is airborne. When we see a press conference that either Tony Olin or Micheál Martin basically open with the statement that COVID is an airborne disease and this is how we need to manage it going forward, we need a focus on air hygiene. That's when I think you'll see a turning point in how we manage this.
Right.
And in the short term, if I was in the very unenviable position of the decision makers who are responsible for managing the health and well-being of Irish people and the Irish economy over the coming months, I would bite the bullet now and say that you need to have moderate restrictions in order to avoid heavy restrictions down the line. Because if we don't do that, then we are going to find ourselves in a more difficult position.
Okay. We're very grateful to you, Tomás Ryan. Tomás is Associate Professor at the School of Biochemistry and Immunology at Trinity College. Thanks to Tomás. Thanks to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.